Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. We've got some hot stories for you today, starting with the latest on the Wildcat Fire out in Lakeside. There's also a heat advisory issued by the Weather Service, and we'll have some tips for you today on how to stay cool. There's good news for campers out at Lake Jennings, and we'll have the details. Stay tuned also for details about an escaped prisoner in the Julian area, as well as some sad news about a hiker who succumbed to heat on a local trail. Neighbors of Gillespie Field are lawyering up, and we'll tell you why today. Our newsmaker interview is with Monty Turner with the Senior Gleaners, and he's going to be talking about their efforts to provide food for the hungry in our region and how you can help, especially if you have a backyard orchard or a vegetable garden or a store or a restaurant with surplus food. Then on Green Scene, we'll tell you about a proposed solar farm in Hukumba Hot Springs and the controversies that it's raising. The CHP is seeking help to find suspects in a road rage shooting on our local freeways. And then on the second half of our show today, on Destination East County, we'll tell you all about the most fun festivals and events this weekend, including some great events for dads this Father's Day weekend and grads after graduations. On our Chaldean Corner, learn about Project Mosul, an effort to digitally recreate some of the ancient artwork and artifacts that have been destroyed by ISIS terrorists in the Middle East. Hear about historic water rights being curtailed by the state of California, and about chilling details released in an autopsy on a 3-year-old boy found in a freezer on the Barona Indian Reservation. On Vines and Wines, we'll visit with a local winemaker descended from royal stock. We'll have information for you on county cool zones and about a decision that can impact you if you're planning to fight a traffic ticket in court. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. A brush fire that started Wednesday evening in Lakeside's Wildcat Canyon has burned more than 150 acres in the Barona area, forcing evacuation of 7 homes on Wednesday as evacuees sheltered in the Barona Casino. Small fixed-wing aircraft and helicopters assisted in battling the blaze, but air tankers capable of making major drops were busy fighting fires elsewhere, including a huge wildfire burning in San Bernardino County. That forced some 250 firefighters from local fire departments to battle the blaze overnight by hand, their way lit by headlamps in steep, rugged terrain. As temperatures soared to near triple digits on Thursday, one firefighter suffered injury and was taken to a local hospital for treatment. Wildcat Canyon Road was shut down during the fire, but has since been reopened and all evacuation orders have been lifted. But with firefighting resources stretched thin due to firestorms raging elsewhere, it's important for all of us to do our part to clear defensible space around our homes and avoid any activities that could spark ignition of a brush fire amid this fourth year of historic drought that has left our backcountry in tinder dry condition. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Ed Barreno with a weather report about an upcoming heat wave. With prolonged high temperatures expected to reach up to 115 in San Diego County deserts over the next few days, county health officials are reminding the public to take precautions to avoid heat stroke and other heat-related illnesses. The National Weather Service in San Diego has issued a heat advisory in effect now through Sunday at 7 p.m. for the lower desert areas of eastern San Diego County. Temperatures inland will be anywhere from 5 to 10 degrees above average, with high temperatures forecast with 112 to 115 degrees. Nighttime temperatures will only drop into the 80s. Mountain and foothill areas in the county are expected to be warm as well, with highs in the 90s. Coastal areas will be near normal temperatures. The county operates the Cool Zones program and has designated more than 115 air-conditioned buildings as cooling centers. Locations and hours of operation can be found on a new interactive map on coolzones.org or by calling 211 San Diego. The Cool Zone at the Borrego Springs Library will be open additional hours until 8 p.m. Wednesday for residents seeking to escape the heat. To avoid heat-related problems, health officials recommend the following. Stay in an air-conditioned area during the hottest hours of the day. Even a few hours in air conditioning can help your body stay cooler. Don't rely on electric fans for cooling if temperatures are over 90 degrees. Wear light, loose-fitting clothing. Drink plenty of water and don't wait until you are thirsty. Avoid alcohol and sugary drinks. Take cool showers. Never leave a child, elderly person, or a pet unattended in a car, even for a brief time. Avoid unnecessary hard work or activities outside during the hottest part of the day. Avoid unnecessary sun exposure and wear a wide-brim hat if you need to be in the sun. Avoid using the oven to cook. Don't hike in extreme heat. If you do hike during warm weather, carry extra water and leave your dog at home. Carry ample supplies of water when driving, especially in desert areas. An extremely high body temperature of 103 or higher, plus symptoms including dizziness, nausea, confusion, and headache are all signs of heat stroke or heat exhaustion. If someone shows these signs, call 911 and begin cooling the individual by moving them to a shaded area, spraying them with cool water and fanning them, placing them in a cool shower if they are alert, monitor the body temperature and continue the cooling efforts, and very importantly, do not give the victim fluids to drink. Elderly people, infants and children, and people with chronic medical conditions are more prone to heat stress. The county advises people with elderly neighbors to check on their well-being during this extreme heat wave.
This is Miriam Raftery with good news for camping enthusiasts out there. The Helix Water Board, which has been considering shutting down the campground at Lake Jennings, has granted a reprieve and delayed action for a year. The vote came after the board heard impassioned testimony from the public, including a Boy Scout leader and residents who shared their own fond childhood memories of camping at the lake. But the long-term future of the campground is not yet secure, despite recent financial gains. Since Helix took back ownership of the lake in 2008, the campground had been losing money at $200,000 a year. But that deficit has dropped nearly tenfold, down to only $24,000 this year. Board members agreed to allow one more year to try and make the lake's campground break even or turn a profit, and also voted to allocate $20,000 for marketing campground activities. Some members of the public argued that a lake and a campground should not be all about money, that the public's interest should take precedence. Bob McDowell, a Boy Scout leader, pointed out that the campground costs just 12 cents a month per ratepayer to run. He said that hundreds of children want to camp at the lake. It would be a travesty to take that away from these kids, he told the board. Board President Deanna Verbecki said that to her, it's all about dollars and cents. Then she disclosed that Supervisor Diane Jacob has sent a letter stating she will ask the county's Parks and Recreation Department to look at a potential partnership role with the county and Helix to keep the campground open. Director Kathleen Coates-Hedberg noted that a recent increase in efforts by the board to get publicity out has increased attendance at the campground, a trend she hopes will continue. But Director John Linden had a different view. He insisted that the district's obligation is only to its ratepayers, noting that most of the lake's users live outside the Helix District. He also said a consultant concluded that the campground needs millions of dollars in upgrades. He concluded, "We're not in the entertainment business. We're not in the camping business." He ultimately did vote to support Verbecki's one-year delay on closing the campground, but said he would support keeping it open long-term only if other cities or the county will agree to invest in the cost-sharing. Director Chuck Muse also voiced concerns, but in the end also backed the motion, at least for now. Just 1 year earlier, the board had considered closing the entire lake to the public, but has since been able to make all other sectors profitable except the campground, and that may soon be in the black, too. After the hearing, Director Joel Scalziti, who headed up the committee to save the lake and its campground, told East County Magazine he is very pleased with the vote, particularly the $20,000 allocated for marketing activities for the first time. Strides are being made, such as getting state approval for kayaks on the lake just last month, he disclosed, adding that already a kayaking club has shown interest in holding group activities at the lake's campground. Scalziti voiced confidence that the new marketing dollars will enable profitability to be achieved in the near future and save one of East County's treasures.
This is Jawan Armstrong with a bulletin about an escaped inmate in East County Mountains. California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation officials are looking for a minimum security inmate who walked away from the La Cima Conservation Camp near Julian. The inmate, 41-year-old Jesse Lozano, was discovered missing by camp staff at approximately 2:30 p.m. on Monday. All local law enforcement agencies have been notified and are assisting in the search for the missing inmate, who was last seen wearing orange inmate clothing. He is Hispanic, 6 feet, 1 inches tall, and weighs 275 pounds. He has black curly hair, brown eyes, and had a mustache and a goatee when last seen. He was serving an 8-year sentence for possession of a controlled substance for sale. He was housed at the fire camp, which is under the joint operation of CAL FIRE and California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Anyone knowing the location of inmate Jesse Lozano or having other relevant information is asked to contact the La Cima Conservation Camp commander at 760-765-3085. Of all offenders who have escaped from an adult institution, camp, or community-based program since 1977, nearly 99% have been apprehended.
A 24-year-old hiker has died after suffering apparent heat-related physical distress on the Cedar Creek Trail near Julian on June 16th in the early evening. His friends called 911 and paramedics were notified along with the sheriff's deputies. According to Sergeant Carlos Medina, a sheriff's helicopter located the group of hikers and landed. First aid was provided and the patient was airlifted to Ramona but died before he could be transported to a hospital. The medical examiner's office was notified and will conduct an investigation along with the Sheriff's Department and the U.S. Forest Service. The popular trail to Cedar Creek Falls is in Cleveland National Forest and has been the scene of numerous rescues through the years, many due to hikers becoming dehydrated, since the trail is steep with very little shade. If you hike this area, be sure to bring ample supplies of water and avoid hiking during excessive heat conditions. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Richard Faust.
Dozens of families are close to filing a lawsuit over the increased air traffic at Gillespie Field Airport, where more expansion is planned. But with a June 30th deadline to file paperwork with a class action lawyer, another 24 residents are needed to join the suit. Sue Strom with Advocates for Safe Airport Policies, or ASAP, says this is our last chance to get something done. A meeting is set for Tuesday, June 23rd at 6:30 p.m. with the lead attorney and interested residents. The meeting will be held at a private home in Fletcher Hills. To RSVP and get directions, contact asapgillespiefield.com. Residents have complained about a recent increase in flight schools and potential hazards ranging from lead pollution to crashes over residential neighborhoods. Several mishaps have already occurred, including one small plane that crashed onto the driveway of a home. Gillespie is now defined by the Federal Aviation Administration as a national airport. That means funding is expected for expansion of runways and yet another increase in flight schools to serve the international demand for more pilots. Strom says, "We have a training pattern running through the heart of our neighborhoods, and that training pattern will become even busier than it is unless we take a stand for our community now. We are already sitting under 140 to 190 touch-and-go operations every single day." The county has disputed claims such as frequent and low-flying aircraft over homes, health and safety risks. But residents say that they've had noise and real estate experts out to their neighborhoods in the past several months who have documented the situation. The attorneys retained by residents are from East County and have dealt with flight schools before, according to Strom. The June 23rd meeting will provide an opportunity for residents to get questions answered and help get a class action lawsuit filed to take action. For more information on the residents' complaints about Gillespie Field, you can visit asapgillespiefield.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Joanne Armstrong with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today I'm here with Monty Turner, a volunteer with Senior Gleaners, an organization that picks fruit and other foods and donated to local agencies that feed the hungry. Welcome to our show, Monty.
Thank you.
So my first question for you is, with the unique name Senior Gleaners, where did the term gleaning or gleaner came from?
A gleaner is somebody that comes in and picks surplus food or crops It actually goes back to biblical times when often a ruler or a wealthy person would set aside part of their crop and then after harvest time would let the peasants or poor people come in and harvest the remainder.
Okay, tell me what exactly your organization is about.
Now the senior gleaners do two things. One part of our mission is to collect surplus fruit from throughout the county. We do a lot of picking in backyard gardens. Can be anywhere from a couple of trees to a dozen. And we also collect surplus food from grocery stores and food service providers. And that can be anything from bread that has expired to food that just hasn't sold and isn't going to be sold. So rather than have that go to waste, we take it and we truck it to a warehouse where our recipient agencies come on a regular basis, take it to their distribution points, and give it to their clients.
That's perfect. So how is the recipient chosen when you're distributing the food?
The people that are eligible to receive those donations must be meeting the federal poverty guideline. They receive the food at no charge. We provide it at no charge to those distributing agencies. And none of our volunteers, nor any of our board members or people that do our coordination, no one is paid on our side either. So it's a free service to people that are also in turn not charged for what they receive.
Okay. And I understand that your organization is in need of volunteers. On average, how many volunteers do you need and what are the tasks of the volunteers?
We currently have a group of about 65 volunteers. We could use way more. Besides people to do the tasks that I mentioned of picking fruit, driving vans to then transport the fruit back to our warehouse, people to staff our warehouse to sort the food and to be there to help load trucks when the recipients come in. We also have a need for people to help with administrative tasks, keeping track of our volunteer hours, answering the phone, coordinating where we're going to go to get the food. So a wide variety of needs.
And since homeowners are allowed to be donors, how could they benefit from donating their surplus foods or their fruits, I should say?
There are several benefits to the homeowner. Just a basic one is that we're saving them a lot of work. If they have extra fruit on trees or produce that they're not using, they don't have to pick it. They don't have to clean it up. On fruit trees, it's very beneficial to get the fruit picked off before the next crop comes on. It's more healthy for the trees. And we also give them a receipt, and they can value the amount that they've donated and use it as a tax deduction.
That's perfect for those who are trying to figure out how they continue their crops, but also pay for the water bill.
Yes, one reason that we're looking for more donors is that some of our traditional donors, their crops just aren't doing as well as they have in the past because of the cost of water. So that has really increased our need for more donors to make up for the ones that aren't able to give as much as they have in the past.
And for our listeners who are interested in becoming a volunteer or a donor themselves, how could they get in contact with your organization?
They should call our coordinator, Elaine, at 619-463-6356, or they can email her at ehiel@aol.com.
And we will also post this on the East County Magazine website under our food section. Before we end, I would like to ask you, what agencies do you support?
There are a variety of agencies that we support. These range from churches to food pantries. We provide food to a teen transition home. So there's a huge variety of people that get the food. It's all over the county. And we estimate that the need is 10 times what we are currently meeting. So we have a huge need for the food and for volunteers to help us collect it.
What are some of the achievements your organization accomplished this past year?
In 2014, we were able to gather 500,000 pounds of food, and we distributed those to 45 agencies. We had 65 volunteers, and they provided 10,000 hours of volunteer work to accomplish that.
That's truly amazing. That's really good for the people. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for helping us spread the word.
Anytime.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community. This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. A proposed industrial-scale solar facility near Hakumba Hot Springs is sparking heated controversy, with some residents raising concerns over fire danger and impacts on local water supplies, wildlife, traffic, and public safety. NextEra Energy, a division of Florida Power and Light, wants to cover over 100 acres of a 304-acre site in the Hakumba area with over 81,000 solar panels on tilting racks, along with a collector substation, transmission lines, and lithium battery energy storage systems in containers the size of cargo cars. Ultimately, the project would produce up to 20 megawatts of power, according to a draft environmental impact report prepared by the consulting firm Dudek. Supporters contend that the project is needed to help meet the state's ambitious renewable energy goals and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But opponents point out that a recent peer-reviewed scientific report published in Bioscience concluded that large-scale solar projects can actually increase environmental degradation on a regional scale. Danielle Cook is a member of the Hakumba Boulevard Revitalization Alliance. She believes the project threatens the region's ecosystem and the town's burgeoning efforts to increase tourism, as well as posing a huge fire danger. Cook supports green energy, and she has solar panels on her own home, but she wants large-scale solar in urban areas on already impacted or contaminated land. She opposes the federal government giving subsidies that she calls corporate welfare for the project. She states, "We are poisoning our fragile desert ecosystem, exposing our community to potential carcinogens, greatly increasing our fire danger, and handing off our precious groundwater for a $1 billion corporation." In comments submitted on the draft environmental impact report, Cook notes there have been virtually no studies on the effects of industrial solar projects on desert wildlife and habitats. Moreover, "We could find no information to prove NextEra's claim that dust suppression chemicals planned for use in Hakumba, chemicals called EnviroTac 2 or Rhino Snot, are non-toxic. Rhino Snot used in Ocotillo at a wind project created a sludgy foam that flooded streets and residential yards, as East County Magazine photographers have documented. When it evaporated in the desert heat, the chemical was also flammable," a toxic official in Imperial County told our editor. "That would clearly pose a huge danger in Hakumba's fire-prone area and communities west of Hakumba that would be in the path of any firestorm. These chemicals have also never been tested for the effects on wildlife or humans, and yet Cook contends they will be spraying the stuff on our property for years." She recalled Monsanto's claims that the pesticide DDT was safe, too, until Rachel Carson's book Silent Spring proved it wasn't, and was in fact responsible for the near extinction of eagles, pelicans, and other species. Cook and others have worked hard to revive tourism in the town, and she objects to the developer's attempt to position Hakumba Hot Springs as a town in decline. Cook says, "Our residents have rallied and worked hard over the past few years to revitalize the town, and it is working. Those efforts include hosting a centennial celebration and four festivals last year, attracting a buyer for the Hot Springs Spa who invested $100,000 in renovating it, raising money to install public art at the park and community center, developing a walking tour of Hakumba, a brochure, restoring a lake, and other efforts are that are now attracting bird watchers, vintage car clubs, motorcyclists, and other tourists who come to enjoy scenic views, breathe clean air, revel in the quiet of nature, and recharge in the hot springs and enjoy dark skies." A new website called GoSanDiegoBackcountry.org has guides to activities from road trips to rock climbing, stargazing to geocaching, art destinations, and more. An industrial-scale solar project has potential to destroy the tourism economy and jobs, the project's opponents fear. Cook found additional problems with the developer's report. The EIR underreported the town's population by 30%, stated that no improvements are planned for its airport when funding has been approved for runway paving to attract private planes. Cook says the EIR also misleadingly cites traffic patterns in the wrong direction, conveniently omitting the fact that dozens of big trucks would rumble through Hakumba's downtown, a rural two-lane highway with no traffic lights where children cross and an elderly resident in a wheelchair was recently killed trying to cross the street. The developer claims property values will be increased if Hakumba Solar is built, But there's evidence that large-scale energy projects actually decrease property values of residential properties nearby. Another key issue is water. The DUDEC report used old rainfall records from 1982 to June 2012, totally ignoring recent years of drought, to claim that there's enough rain to recharge groundwater slated to be pumped for construction. DUDEC has a history of underestimating water use substantially at other major projects. NextEra has offered to build a new well for the town, a prospect that has drawn interest from some of the local planning group members, but others fear it's not enough. The developer also claims that Cumbus Solar would have minimal impact on air quality, largely ignoring dust issues and relying on the nearest monitoring station in Alpine, far from Hucumba Hot Springs. And meanwhile, in Imperial Valley, which has numerous desert solar projects, asthma rates have soared. The EIR omits mention of sensitive species found in Hucumba, such as tricolored blackbirds and bats. No survey of rare plants was conducted at the site, so nobody really knows what's there. Perhaps the most worrisome fact, though, for people in our region, is that the project is located in an area classified by CAL FIRE as a very high fire severity zone, and that is further classified as a wildfire corridor. Based on the area's history and fuels, CAL FIRE predicts that a high-intensity fire can be expected to occur in the project area in the future, whether caused by nature or by man. Cook asks incredulously, "This is where we want to install 81,000 solar panels, 10 container-sized lithium battery units, inverters, and other potential ignition sources? Are we serious?" The developer has offered fire mitigation measures, such as spraying water during construction, and the EIR lists 4 fire stations nearby. But Cook calls those claims smoke and mirrors, noting that only 2 of the stations are close enough to meet the county-mandated 20-minute response time. A third is closing, and the fourth is too far away. Moreover, the only foam truck in the area designated to handle electrical fires is not in working order, according to Cook. She calls the project a recipe for disaster, potentially putting us in harm's way and increasing our already high fire insurance policies. This is a project that could generate dangerous chemical fires that, when spread, could cause property damage as well as loss of life, she adds. Her husband, Howard Cook, the former chair of the Hucumba Planning Group, has asked the EIR process to be restarted due to violations of notification and agenda requirements. Danielle Cook has told us that some residents report being intimidated by the project's backers and that they're afraid to speak out in public forums. NextEra, it should be noted, has itself engaged in what some call bullying tactics against an anti-wind activist in Canada who videotaped NextEra's contractor removing a bald eagle nest. After the activist posted a parody of NextEra's logo online labeled NextTerror, the company sued her for copyright infringement. But the Cooks refused to be silenced. Danielle Cook told us, "Like Rachel Carson, we will not give up pointing out the dangers inherent in these types of projects, as we love our community and we want to protect it."
This is Ed Barena with a Crime Beat report. A motorist was shot in the chest following a road rage incident on Monday, June 15th around 11 p.m. while traveling northbound on I-5 north of SeaWorld Drive. The motorist pulled over and was taken to the hospital. The California Highway Patrol seeks public help to locate the suspect vehicle, a white sedan similar to a Scion TC, and its 2 occupants. The driver of the suspect vehicle was an African American man around 20 or 30 years old. The suspect vehicle also had an African American woman passenger. The victim was driving a gray 1987 BMW. After the shooting, the suspect vehicle exited the freeway at Claremont Drive and headed west. If you happen to witness the incident between these 2 vehicles, please contact the CHP investigator at 619-220-5492.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Miriam Raftery.
And this is Ed Barena.
With this week's Destination East County, which includes some amazing events to delight Dad this Father's Day weekend, from an air show to a vintage train ride and a brunch with Cowboy Jack. Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including Julian's Gold Rush Days, 4th of July festivities, a country music concert in Santee, and the annual Descanso Days Fair and Parade. So stay tuned for all these events and much, much more.
Air Show San Diego will take to the skies over Gillespie Field in San Diego, June 20th and 21st. This year's Air Show San Diego will feature a representative collection of aircraft and acts to support the commemoration of the 70th anniversary of the end of World War II. A mock battle with pyrotechnic special effects will be held both days. Gates open at 9 a.m. For ticket information and details, visit the Air Group website at ag1.caf.org.
Lakeside's River Park Conservancy will hold its first ever Boars and Brew event scheduled for Saturday, June 20th on the summer solstice. You're invited for a beer stroll along the section of the San Diego River Trail that the Conservancy manages for an evening full of beer tasting and food. The event starts at 4 p.m. and lasts until 8, or until the Boars and Brew run out. To purchase tickets or a designated driver, you can visit boarsandbrew.weebly.com.
Dads and their kids can enjoy a free game of bowling on Father's Day this Sunday, June 21st at the Viejas Bowl in Alpine. You can also enjoy galactic bowling every Friday and Saturday night all summer long. For details, visit viejas.com/bowling.
The 17th annual Blues Bash will be held at Mangini Winery in Julian on Saturday, June 20th from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. The music fest will include Jonathan Boogie Long and the Blues Revolution from Louisiana, crowned King of the Blues by Guitar Center. The event also features wine tasting and dancing. For more information or tickets, you can visit julianca.com.
Enjoy San Diego's beautiful backcountry mountains on the last vintage train ride of the season, departing from Pacific Southwest Railway Museum's Campo Depot on Saturday, June 20th at 11 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. for a scenic 12-mile journey and museum tour. For ticket information and reservations, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org.
Famous night sky photographer Dennis Mamana invites you to shoot the Milky Way during a night sky photography workshop June 20th and 21st in Borrego Springs. As an added bonus, participants are also invited to join in a desert sky shoot capturing the beauty of the Anza Borrego Desert and the astronomical wonders in the sky above. For reservations and details, visit DennisMamana.com, and that's spelled M-A-M-M-A-N-A.
Pine Hills Lodge in Julian is hosting a Father's Day brunch on Sunday, June 21st from 9 a.m. to noon with Cowboy Jack singing traditional country music from Hank Williams, Johnny Cash, Merle Haggard, Willie Nelson, and more, along with acoustic guitar and harmonica. Cowboy Jack Johnson is the lead singer from The Hank Show, The Band in Black, and he is the singing cowboy for Rawhide Ranch in Bonsall, California. For tickets, visit pinehillslodge.com.
And now for a preview of coming attractions. The City of Santee's Summer Concert Series is underway with live music every Thursday night from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Town Center Community Park East. On Thursday, June 25th, Emerald River will perform top 40 country music hits. The concert series also features free kids activities. For details, visit the City of Santee's website or our calendar at eastcountymagazine.org.
Summer movies in the park are back at Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine, complete with comfy outdoor seating, popcorn, and soda for a nominal admission fee. Kids under 12 have free admission. Next up, Dolphin Tale 2 is screening on Friday, June 26th, followed by Finding Nemo on Saturday, June 27th. Gates open at 7 with showtime at sunset around 8 p.m.
Experience the history of the Old West with costumed hosts to interpret what life was like in the California mining camp in the 1880s during the Julian Gold Rush days on June 27th and 28th. There are activities throughout the town. The Eagle High Peak Mine and Museum, one of the more prosperous mines during the Gold Rush, will be offering mine tours, museum tours, and gold panning. There will also be historical encampments featuring miners, mountain men, and cowboys, plus gunfighting, reenactments, mock claim jumping, and tomahawk throwing. Plus enjoy an arts and crafts market, gem mining, and children's pioneer games. Also be on the lookout for the Golden Nugget at participating stores in Julian to join a scavenger hunt. The folks at Julian Train and Gold Mine Tour at Smith Ranch will offer a special train ride. Julian Doves and Desperados will present historic comedy skits in the stage between Julian Fitness Center and the Julian Market and Deli. And on Saturday only, Julian Mining Company on Highway 78 will have gold panning and square dancing, plus opportunities to learn woodcrafting, pottery making, or make your own crafts for a fee. For details on all of these events, you can visit julianca.com.
The annual Heritage Quilt Show, presented by the Julian Women's Club, will be located upstairs in the Julian Town Hall on June 27th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. On display will be quilts from as far back as the 1800s, many treasured from local families' ancestors. A beautiful king-size quilt made collectively by local quilters will be raffled off, with the winner announced on July 4th. There will also be handmade items for sale at the event.
Julian hosts its all-day 4th of July celebration from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Independence Day, including a flyover at 11 a.m. and a parade that rolls out at noon down Main Street, plus musical talent and entertainment. And after the parade, there will be a barbecue and music at the American Legion for a fee.
El Cajon invites you to celebrate Independence Day with games, musical entertainment, and fireworks at the City of El Cajon's 4th of July celebration. On Independence Day, the El Cajon Recreation Department will once again have a celebration event at Kennedy Park, located at 1675 East Madison Avenue in El Cajon. The fun starts with carnival games, an inflatable jump, kiddie train, and skate park from 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. There will also be free crafts and family games from 2 to 6. Two live bands will play, followed by the finale, a 9 p.m. fireworks show with synchronized music.
The City of Santee will host its annual Santee Salutes 4th of July celebration at Town Center Community Park from 3:30 to 10 p.m. on Independence Day. The festivities include live music featuring 80s All-Stars, a patriotic ceremony at 6 p.m., a kids' fun zone, and a spectacular fireworks display at 9 p.m. There will also be food vendors. The event is free, but there are fees for parking at locations near the park, or you can take a free shuttle service from the Costco parking lot.
Can you say supercalifragilisticexpialidocious? Christian Community Theater San Diego is celebrating its 35th anniversary at this beautiful Mount Helix Park Amphitheater with this summer's production of Mary Poppins. Enjoy an evening with everyone's favorite nanny from July 9th through August 2nd. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit cctsandiego.org.
The 46th annual Descanso Days annual parade and fair will roll out on July 11th starting at 10 a.m. on Viejas Grade in Descanso. Sponsored by the Descanso Town Hall Association, the parade features a flyover by the vintage World War II aircraft fighter planes from Gillespie Field, followed by a parade with vintage cars and tractors, horses and riders, and more. After the parade, the Just Friends Bluegrass Band will perform, followed by the Nitro Express Western Band. The day's festivities will also include dancing, contests, children's games, and Western reenactments by the Grand Ladies of the Old West, ending at 6 p.m.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org. If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Coming up next, the Chaldean Corner on East County Magazine's radio show, bringing you news for and about our region's Iraqi Chaldean community.
Imagine using crowdsourced images to digitally recreate 3D versions of ancient works of art, architecture, and religion, starting with those destroyed by the Islamic State in Iraq and other World Heritage sites where antiques have been lost. That's precisely the mission of Project Mosul, an innovative undertaking started by UCSD researcher Matthew Vincent, along with several others. The first project is the ancient city of Mosul, formerly home to many displaced Iraqi Chaldean immigrants here in East County, where ISIS terrorists destroyed artifacts dating back to the early roots of Christianity. You can help by uploading vacation photos or videos you have taken on these sites. Researchers also seek help in sorting, masking, and processing reconstructions on the site. If you know how to code, you can also build tools online and join in conversations with other volunteers. Project Mosul has already expanded to work with other European Union projects as well as private industry, particularly Sketchfab, a startup focusing on 3D content on the web to create essentially a YouTube for 3D objects. Together, they are working on a framework for the digital restoration of lost heritage with the ultimate goal to provide access to these virtual reality museums online. If you want to get involved, visit projectmosul.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Shawan Armstrong.
Ever since California established its water rights system back in 1914, senior water rights holders with claims before 1914 have been able to freely use as much water as they could pump. But for the first time ever, the State Water Resources Control Board has ordered curtailment of water use by 114 of the state's oldest water rights holders, including farmers, rural and urban water districts in the Sacramento Delta, as well as the Sacramento and San Joaquin River watershed. The order does not affect entities with water rights dating back before 1903, such as the city of San Francisco, but the Sacramento Bee reports that officials indicate the water board will soon be targeting even those historic water right holders. The action comes amid a fourth year of record drought. News from NSA satellite imagery that groundwater sources are being depleted, and now a U.S. Geological Survey report finds land across California are sinking a foot a year or more due to overpumping of groundwater, causing severe damage to roads, bridges, wells, and canals. The order won't affect water already pumped out and stored in reservoirs by senior water rights holders who anticipated the state's curtailment action. But not everyone is taking the order in stride. The Oakland Irrigation District has announced plans to sue the state. Byron Bethany Irrigation District in Contra Costa County had indicated it's considering litigation as well. The district is refusing orders to cut off deliveries to the Mountain House suburb, since doing so would leave the community with no water at all. Paul Wegner, president of the California Farm Bureau, issued this statement in response. With every turn of the screw, as water supplies shrink, more people suffer. Water shortages undermine rural economies, both in the short term and the long term, and these additional shortages will spread that impact to more people in more places. Wegner also called for action to help protect farmers by developing additional water sources, including California must remove obstacles to development of new water storage and pursue new supplies through recycling, desalination, and other technologies. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
An autopsy report released this week reveals chilling details in the death of 3-year-old Roland Eagle Eyes Meza Sandoval, whose body was found in a home freezer on the Barona Indian Reservation in January. The violence suffered by this child is symptomatic of a broad national problem of abuse suffered by children on reservations, often at the hands of non-Native American men. According to the medical examiner, the child died of asphyxiation after beatings and abuse that also resulted in blunt force injuries of his head, neck, and torso, as well as a fractured jaw and other injuries. The child's mother, Elena Rose Welch, told authorities that her boyfriend, Julio Mongiati, killed her son after first beating him and forcing her to participate over a 2-day period. Neither informed law enforcement of the death until 11 days later on January 16th, when officers responded to an assault call at the home. Barona security officers found Mongiati wielding an axe in the front yard. Officers ordered him to drop it. He did and then went inside to get Welch. Officers heard a gunshot, after which Welch came outside carrying a shotgun. She dropped the gun and then told officers her boyfriend killed the child and put his body in the freezer, forcing her to help. Mongiati died of gunshot wounds. The child's body was later found beneath the frozen foods in the freezer. Welch was initially arrested in connection with both deaths, but she was released after District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis declined to file charges. Lieutenant John Marion with the Sheriff's Homicide Detail told us that the case is still open, adding, "We are still following up leads and conducting interviews." According to the autopsy report, on the second day of beatings, Mongiati wanted to go to the store. The child was left alone in a closet covered in a sheet, his eyes and mouth taped shut. The couple came home and found the child not breathing. Welch said she tried to perform CPR but could not revive the boy. The two then washed his body with bleach and wrapped it in a sheet and placed it in a freezer. Welch's mother, Lisa Hernandez, told 10 News, at the time the body was found, that about a month earlier Welch had bruises on her face and a bloody lip and claimed she had fallen. She had become less talkative and family could reach her only by calling Mongiati first. Hernandez said her daughter loved her child and she couldn't believe she would harm him. It is unclear whether Welch may have been physically abused herself, threatened or held against her will, or whether or not she made any attempt to get help for little Roland once the abuse began. Asked whether Welch had previously reported abuse against herself or her child, the sheriff responded that our request had been forwarded to legal counsel for review. The case points up a broader problem of violence against Native American women on reservations. While the details here are horrific, domestic violence targeting Native American women and their children is tragically far from rare. A report by the Attorney General's Advisory Committee on Native American and Alaskan Children Exposed to Violence, titled Ending Violence So Children Can Thrive, states, today, a vast majority of American Indian and Alaska Native children live in communities with alarmingly high rates of poverty, homelessness, drug abuse, alcoholism, suicide, and victimization. Domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse are widespread. The researchers found that while American Indian kids suffer from disproportionately high rates of abuse and neglect, most of them are not receiving any treatment, and yet they suffer post-traumatic stress disorder at the same rate as service members returning from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, and they're twice as likely as any other race to die before age 24. The Census Bureau reports that 39% of all American Indian women have been victims of domestic violence, and non-Indians commit a disproportionate number of those crimes on tribal lands. According to the U.S. Bureau of Justice, the rate of rape or sexual assault on American Indian women is 3.5 times higher than for any women of any other race in the U.S. According to the U.S. Justice Department, 1 in 3 American Indian women is raped in her lifetime. Historically, a problem nationwide has been that tribal governments lacked authority to arrest and prosecute non-Native American men who abused women or children on reservations, but law enforcement off reservations have often been reluctant to prosecute the men due to a variety of issues. While Congress recently renewed and expanded the Violence Against Women Act, which includes new protections for Native American women, it does not address the rights of abused children. The Attorney General's Advisory Committee, which authored the report on ending violence against Native American children, sought to persuade then-Attorney General Eric Holder to extend more legal protections for children on reservations. The report's authors concluded, how we choose to deal with the current public safety crisis in Native America, a crisis largely of the federal government's own making over more than a century of failed laws and policies, can set our generation apart from the legacy that remains one of great unfinished challenges of the civil rights movement. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Manis of the Manis Vineyards Estate.
Hello, San Diego. Welcome to Vines and Wines. It's a radio show that introduces you to many of the rising new superstars and energized people in the local wine industry that will forever change the landscape of San Diego as it emerges into a brand new EVA wine growing district.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I am guest hosting the Vines and Wines segment on our show, and we are on location in Ramona's Highland Valley, the heart of wine country up here. And our very special guest today is Alfredo Gallone with the Principe de Tricase Winery. Alfredo, welcome to the show.
Hello.
So I understand that your family has a very illustrious lineage in Italy with its roots in Greece. Tell us about that.
My family moved from Greece in the 1500s to southern Italy. And because at that time southern Italy was attacked on the coastline from the African tribes, my ancestor organized protection for the coastline. And the king of Naples heard about this valor and named him as Principe di Tricase. And so the lineage started with him.
So he was recognized for his heroism by being named the prince of all the lands that he was protecting. That is amazing. Now, I also understand that your winery here specializes in a grape called Alianico, which originated in Greece but is no longer grown there. It's grown in Italy, and now you're bringing it here to Southern California in Ramona. Tell us what is so special about the Alianico grape and wine.
Well, we produce here three grapes, Alianico, Aleatico, and Nebbiolo. And we're just starting with some Petit Syrah, but mostly are Italian grapes that are very old, ancient grapes. The Aglianico was used by the Romans to go around and to plant new grapes everywhere because it was very hardy. And the wine mostly was capable of traveling versus other wines that are more delicate.
I'm told that the Aleatico was the favored wine of a very famous person in history.
The Aleatico was the wine that Napoleon used to drink when he was a prisoner at the island of Elba. And if you go on Wikipedia, you'll find out more about him loving the wines and being happy to drink that kind of a specialty wine, which is available here now in Ramona. And is made the same ancient way it was made then today.
Amazing. It's really one of the most unusual wines I've ever tasted. Can you tell us about that?
The Aleatico has the rose flavor and smell. And is just coming out of the glass when you pour it. Without any addition whatsoever to the grape itself or to the wine. It's just a natural smell, which is really, really amazing.
You also have a wine called Romantico that's a dessert wine. Can you give us some details?
Yes, the Romantico is the same Aleatico grapes dried out in the sun after harvest and then squeezed. It's a very particular wine with a strong aroma, beautiful for dessert, a little high in alcohol, but it will really give you a romantic evening.
Well, thank you for sharing that information.
We also, from the skin of the Aglianico, Aunt B Botanicals makes a cream that is used for botanical clay mask or for preserving, supposedly preserving from aging.
Amazing. Okay. Now, I see that a lot of your wine bottles here have medals hanging around them. Tell us about some of the awards that you've won.
In the last 2 or 3 years, after my wine started, to my taste, was kind of good. I didn't know if it was just me that I liked it or if it was a good wine. So I sent for competitions all over the country, and I won like 12 medals in 2 years.
Very good, including some impressive ones, Finger Lakes International Competition in New York, to name one of them. I understand that you're only making these right now in very small batches, so how do people get these wines?
Our production is very limited, and we make around 6,000 bottles of wine every year. So we will be able to sell it through membership and through club membership only to maybe 200 or 300 people that will enroll to our club membership, and that's how we distribute our wine.
Okay, so that's through pineandwine.com.
Yes, or they can call me on the phone numbers that are listed on the web. And to you listeners, if you mention that you heard about this interview and you come to us, I'll make sure you'll be very happy and surprised with some special treatment. Thank you.
Well, that's very kind. Now, you also grow Christmas trees. Tell us a little bit about how you got into that.
Well, when I bought the property here in Ramona in 2007, it was a Christmas tree farm. And I was here when the last year the former owner was selling the last of his trees. So everybody that came begged me to keep the Christmas tree farm open. And so we have pine with the Christmas tree and wine with the grapes, and we have pineandwine.com, and we still are open to sell the Christmas tree at Christmas time.
Well, very good. And if people want to come and do tastings, I understand that it's by appointment only right now, is that correct?
Yes, we are open by appointment. You can go on our website and pineandwine.com, and my number is there. You can call me, and anytime I'm up here, I'll be happy to open up for you and show you my winery, taste my wine from barrel or from bottles.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thank you very much for coming.
Cheers.
Cheers. of good old summer fine. Strolling through the shady lanes with your baby mine. You hold her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign. That she's your tootsie wootsie in the good old summer time.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. As temperatures climb, it's important to stay cool. Seniors and those without air conditioning are particularly vulnerable to heat-related illness. The county has provided a list of cool zones where you can beat the heat, including places in East County, such as libraries and senior centers. All are free and open to the public during designated hours. You can find a list of school zones in your area at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
If you got a traffic ticket in California, here's some good news. Courts can no longer make you pay bail in order to challenge the ticket. There's a catch, though. You have to show up at the arraignment to ask for a trial. The change, an emergency rule adopted by the Judicial Council, which oversees the state's courts, is effective immediately. The American Civil Liberties Union has contended that requiring bail before a hearing violates constitutional protections of due process and equal protection. In other kinds of cases, bail is only supposed to be charged if the defendant is deemed a flight risk. But some say the ruling does not go far enough. It will not help the nearly 6 million drivers who already lost their licenses due to an inability to pay bail, which can be hundreds or even thousands of dollars. It won't help those who miss arraignment because they never received a notice in mail, were ill, went to the wrong courthouse, or didn't show up because they had no money. An average traffic fine is now $500. The Los Angeles Times reports and penalties can quadruple that in some jurisdiction. The ACLU has argued that the process has also been discriminatory since people of color are stopped disproportionately for traffic citation over whites. Forcing drivers to post bail was adopted ostensibly to make sure drivers would show up in court for trials and avoid wasting time of court staff and law enforcement officers who are required to show up at such proceedings. Each jurisdiction had its own set of rules, and sometimes those were confusing. In San Diego Superior Court, for instance, drivers had the option to skip arraignment and mail in a request for trial, but only if they paid the ticket in advance. Even if you showed up at arraignment, you could still be required to pay bail before scheduling a trial. So, even if you were innocent, you had no money to pay, and you were treated as though you were guilty in a process that some critics have said amounted to legal extortion. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Juwan Armstrong.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.